Welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves and it's great to have you with me for another Listen to Older Voices program. This is part one of a three-part program on the life and times of 79-year-old Ron Fisher. I visited Ron and his wife Lynn in the outer Melbourne area of Beaconsfield Upper. Ron's earliest recollections started about the age of four. He enjoyed school, but in his own words, was not a good scholar. As he grew into his teens, he developed a passion for radio broadcasting and with a friend visited every radio station in Melbourne looking for a job. Eventually, he got one at Radio 3OW, but it only lasted a week. He then got a job in a regular radio play at 3DB, and he was only 16. Regretfully for him, he left after 12 months to go into his father's shoe business. So, with many more stories shared by Ron, listen as I speak with him and we learn about his background and how he eventually escaped shoe sales for the technical side of radio. First of all, Ron, thank you very much for inviting me into your home. And if I might start by asking you, where were you born and when were you born?
I was born on the 14th of June, 1930, which makes me 79, of course. And I was born in Caulfield. We lived in Glen Huntly, my family. We had a house in Neerham Road, Glen Huntly, but I was actually born across the border in Caulfield, not very far away.
For people listening interstate, that's an inner suburb of Melbourne, isn't it?
Yes, it is. That's right.
What are your earliest memories, Ron?
I guess some of my earliest memories are starting in school at the age of four, and I wasn't very happy about it, I can assure you of that. That's the one memory I do have. But I do have some memories of earlier than that when we went on holidays down to, I'm not sure where, somewhere down the peninsula. And we went down to big national park that now is down there. It was, in those days, it was a military reserve right on Point Nepean. And I can remember going down there, and that must have been about early 1934, I would think, something like that.
That would have still been an operating base then, would it?
I believe it was, but my memories of it are fairly vague.
Of course, you were so young.
Yes. But I do remember going down into an underground fort or something that they had there. I think they had guns there to repel the Russians when they were coming. I don't think they actually came, but...
No. How was it that you got into a base like that? Was that because your father was in the forces or something?
No. I've no idea how it happened. Right. It was somebody that we met down there when we were on holidays, and I think the suggestion was made and off we went. But I'm getting a bit vague on things back that far now.
Well, I mentioned your father. What memories do you have of your father?
My father ran a very successful shoe business in Glen Huntly, a retail shoe business. During the war, he enlisted in the Air Force and went overseas to Egypt as a cipher officer, which meant that he was decoding messages that came in. And when he came back, which was just in the latter part of the war that he came back, he was stationed down at the air base at Laverton, which is just out west of Melbourne. And I became very interested in aircraft at that time. I used to wander around Laverton. I used to go down there after school. I'd get the train down there and he'd meet me and take me in. And I used to wander around. I used to get in and out of Spitfires and Hurricanes and all that sort of thing, bow fighters. And so I became very interested in aircraft at that time.
That sounds like something out of a boy's own story.
Oh, it was remarkable, yes. Not the sort of thing that everybody could do because the war was still going on. It was in the very last part of the war that this happened, but it was really something to be able to do that.
Mm. What about Mum? What do you recall about Mum?
My mother died very young. Both my parents did, actually. My mother died when I was 15. My father died when I was 21. My mother, I believe, was a very, very good dressmaker. I think she designed clothing. She worked at a place in Melbourne somewhere, and I can remember being taken in there when I was quite young and sort of introduced to everybody. I was probably no more than 5 or 6 at the time or something like that. My mother was quite a remarkable person in that she could drive a car. Now, that was saying something in 1934. But not only that, my grandparents, my parental grandparents, lived up in the Mallee. They were wheat farmers. And it was nothing for her to put me in the car and drive from Melbourne up to Rainbow, which is about, what would it be, about 350 kilometres mm-hmm. in a day, just the That's two of
big,
us.
That would have been up. A big journey in those days,
it too. It was a big journey, and the yes. roads weren't quite as good as they are now. A lot of them were unmade. But that's the sort of thing that she could do. So she was quite a remarkable person.
Would you have called her independent?
An independent person. Mm.
Not of your family or your father, but it sounds like she was a very strong-willed woman.
I would say that to be true, yes, yes.
Were you her only child?
Yes.
Did you ever feel as though you missed out because you didn't have brothers and sisters?
Never gave it a thought, no. No, it was just the way it was.
Mm. What do you recall about the family home as a young child?
The family home was in Glen Huntly, 81 Nearham Road. It's still there. And we actually lived in it for a short time when we got married. My father, when my mother died later on, my father remarried a wonderful person. And she was living in that house. And we moved in there too until we built our own house at Glen Waverley. But the house is still there. It was right at the back of the Caulfield Racecourse. So on my way home from school by train, I'd often get off at Caulfield and walk through the racecourse to our house directly on the other side.
All right. You mentioned school. Did you enjoy school?
Yes, I did. My initial schooling was at Glen Huntly State School. And incidentally, we've just had a reunion there, and I was able to meet a few people that I hadn't seen for probably nearly 70 years or
Goodness.
More. So, Glen Huntly, then I went to Gardiner Central School, which was sort of grades 7 and 8 equivalent. And then at that school I met a fellow, and he was going to Melbourne Grammar, and I talked my father into getting me into Melbourne Grammar, which he did, so I finished up with 4 years in Melbourne Grammar. And I enjoyed school all the way through. Now, I wasn't a good scholar. In fact, we've still got some of my old school reports, and they're not brilliant, I can assure you of that. Very ordinary. I liked some subjects, and some subjects just didn't go down with me. But overall, I enjoyed it, and it gave me an opportunity in my latter years to get into broadcasting. I was very keen on acting in the school plays that we had every year, and some of them were very, very good. I've still got photographs of them. And some of us decided we wanted to get into broadcasting. So we decided to go around all the radio stations in Melbourne to see if we could get a job, an after-school job. Well, initially, with another friend of mine, a fellow by the name of Graham Evans, who was a well-known broadcaster some years ago, we got a job at 3AW. And the job for me only lasted a week. I was a junior announcer for a week. He went on and became a permanent staff member at 3AW. In fact, he went overseas to the BBC and I think Ceylon or somewhere, and then eventually came back to the ABC, where everybody finishes up, of course, the ABC. And after that, after I had my week at 3AW, I managed to land a job at 3DB. And I was working in the children's session with a lady who was very, very, very good. She'd been an educated, university-educated teacher and various things, and she got the job at 3DB running their children's session. Her name was Jean Lawson. And I worked in a play, a radio play, at 3DB called The Fake McGangies. Very interesting part. We'd go in about 4:30, we'd run through the script, 5 o'clock on the air, and the play went for about 1/4 hour, and I did that for not quite, but nearly a year in there until I left school at the end of 1947.
So you were doing this as a almost as just as a boy.
Yes, that's right.
Right.
Yeah, I was a 16-year-old, 17-year-old. Yes. Yes, that's right.
That would have been, well, I mean, that must have been something quite remarkable for a young boy or a young man in those days to have been involved in radio. I mean, radio was really important, wasn't it? Television, everybody has a television, but radio was like the centre of the home in those days.
Oh, there was no television.
Mm.
But radio was something special, wasn't it?
Oh, of course it was. Yes, yes, yes. You didn't have pictures, but you made your own pictures.
Theatre of the imagination.
Yes, yes, indeed. There were serials on. Dad and Dave, Martin's Corner, Hop Harrigan, all these sort of things. And you just sat and listened to it, and the pictures were up there in your head.
Yes.
Hmm.
Presenting Hop Harrigan, face of the airwaves. CX4 calling control tower, CX4 calling control tower, standing by.
Control tower, back to CX4, wind southeast, ceiling 1200, all clear.
Okay, this is Hop Harrigan coming in. Yes, it's America's ace of the airways, coming in for another transcribed episode in the adventures of Hop Harrigan.
And now to our story. Lakeville has become the scene of a strange and puzzling mystery, the mystery of the vanishing men. When Bill King, star reporter for the Continental News Service, arrived in Lakeville, he told Hop, Tank, and Gail Nolan what seemed to be a fantastic story.
I'm on the trail of a man who makes people disappear. I don't know his name, I don't know what he looks like, but he's got a funny habit. He whistles most of the time. And you know what he whistles? The funeral march. The one that goes like this.
At the moment, the trail of the whistling mystery man seems to have led to a traveling carnival setting up its tents on the Lakeville fairgrounds. Searching for Tank, who had strangely disappeared, Hop and Bill King drove up to the fairgrounds at 2 a.m. Under powerful floodlights, the carnival crew was setting up for the following day. Strolling through the grounds, Hop suddenly spotted Tank watching a tent being raised.
There he is, Bill. Come on. Boy, am I going to give him a piece of my mind, worrying us half.
But a strange thing happened. But actually, what has happened? Why is Tank acting so peculiarly? Well, gang, you're in for a big surprise in tomorrow's excitingly mysterious episode, so don't miss it. Tune in, same time, same station, and fly with Hop Harrigan, ace of the airwaves. So long, Hop. We'll be seeing you, same time, same mutual station.
And this is Listen to Older Voices. Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio.
I'd like to investigate with you a little more about the radio and where that went. But before we do that, can we just go back a little bit and talk about you as a boy? Friends. Did you have many friends?
A few. Not a lot. I did. Where we lived, there were very few of my school friends there. In fact, there were none. There was the girl next door. We used to, you know, have parties and things like that occasionally, birthday parties and that sort of thing.
So if you didn't have many friends around you, what did you do to entertain yourself? What did you get up to? I mean, kids get up to all sorts of things. What did you get up to?
I was a pretty quiet little boy, actually. I didn't get up to a lot at all, really. I had a few friends, and sometimes I'd go to their house. I don't think they'd very often come to mine, but... So, no, I didn't really get up to a lot at all, to be
perfectly honest. Did you play any sports?
Not particularly, no. No. Didn't get into sporting until somewhat later.
Mm-hmm. Well, what sport was that, and how later was that?
Well, in the latter days, I played a lot of tennis, church tennis teams and things like that. And eventually when my family started to grow up, they got interested in playing squash, and I used to play squash. And I used to often play squash on the way home from work. I worked shift work, and a friend of mine, who I still see quite regularly, we'd stop off at the local squash court and have an hour of squash about 4 o'clock in the afternoon before we went home.
A good physical activity.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah.
Mm. All right. So you haven't got many friends, and you didn't really get up to much mischief and you weren't involved in sporting, what did you do in your spare time then? What kept you occupied?
That's a good question, and I don't know that I can specifically remember what I did, to put it that way.
Were you an avid reader?
I used to read, yes, yes. I had quite a collection of books. I used to love reading Jules Verne books, you know, Around the World in 80 Days, and all that sort of thing.
The precursor to today's science fiction.
Yes, yes, that's right. I had quite a collection of them. I don't know where they all went to, but they've long gone now, but anyway.
A lot of children or a lot of young people will go out and earn pocket money. Did you have any jobs like that, or was the radio job your first income?
Well, my job at 3DB, I earned 5 shillings an episode, and that was three nights a week. It was Monday, Wednesday and Friday, so I was earning 15 shillings a week.
That was pretty good money in those days.
It was very good money in those days. Now, I also worked on a Saturday morning in my father's shop, and I think I earned 10 shillings for that or something like that.
So, well, he was a very generous man.
I was doing quite well, actually.
You were. Yeah. Were you able to keep this money and use it for your own, or did you either choose or were you required to give some back into the household?
No, I wasn't. No, I kept it. I probably spent it on goodness only knows what, but there it was. It probably started my fortune, if you like.
So, all right, 16, you're doing radio plays at 3DB. Why did this come to an end?
It came to an end because when I left school, I was expected to go into the shoe business.
Of course.
So I did, and I spent quite a few years in the shoe business, up to about 1963. Now, being I'd been in broadcasting, and I was mad keen on both sides of broadcasting, the actual broadcasting part of it, and also in the technical side of things. By that time, I'd well and truly qualified for my amateur radio license, which is another part of the story. And a very good friend of mine, I wanted to get out of the shoe business. It just wasn't for me. Mm. And things weren't going all that well. A very good friend of mine, who was a radio ham, he said, why don't you go into the ABC? So I did. I went in there and I got a job.
Just like that?
Just like that. That's right. Quite amazing.
And you had your radio amateur broadcast license, wasn't it? It was to be operated. Yeah. But did you have any formal training in electronics or?
No, none whatsoever. I had books. I taught myself the whole thing from the word go. And it just fascinated me. It's one of those things that I really loved doing, playing around. I built crystal sets and I built one valve sets and all that sort of thing. And there it was. So I went in there and I told them what qualifications I had, which was an amateur radio license. And they said, OK, you're in. So I joined the technical staff. Mm. In at the ABC in Melbourne, and it went on from there.
All right, well, I think that sounds like this is a major part of your life, so excuse me if I don't let you just jump like that, because I think there's probably quite a few stories in here. Was it a real eye-opener working as a young man in the ABC, or did you just take it in your stride and it was just a job?
Well, I enjoyed it very much. The other thing about it was there were a lot of people working in there who I knew. So it was. It wasn't a case of going somewhere and not knowing anybody. I knew a lot of people there who were working.
How did that come about?
Because they were radio amateurs too.
Right.
So we had a common background, if you like.
And what was your first job with the ABC?
My first job was studio operations work. And we had, of course, a lot of different studios there doing different things. Radio Australia was there. And we had studios for 3LO, 3AR, 774 and 621, as they're now known, which I think is a shame, but however. We had a separate studio for regional stations, for doing regional programs to go up to, say, 3WV in Horsham, 3GI in Sale, 2CO Corowa. And it was a case of doing control room work there.
Listen to older voices, revisiting through recollections.
Eventually, I got a job working with Peter Evans in the breakfast program that went on for, probably very nearly 10 years, I guess. And that was a plum job. Very, very good. Peter Evans at that time was doing the breakfast program right around Australia. Oh, except for, I think, Western Australia. I don't think that came into it. So he was very, very well known. He was quite a character of a fellow. And I think if I hadn't been paid to do the job, I would have done it just the same. It was that sort of work. We started at about 4:30 in the morning, so it meant I had to get up pretty early to get in there. That went on for quite a few years. So there were just two of us doing it, this particular thing. We rotated around sort of week by week, and I'd do it one week, and another fellow by the name of Lynn Jones did the other side of it. He did exactly the same as I did, but we just did around.
People listening wouldn't forgive me if I didn't ask you, what do you mean when you say we did it? What did you actually do?
We had to operate the control centre, if you like, the studio control centre, in that we would take in news broadcasts and things like that. We had to go to Sydney for the news, then we'd take the Victorian news. You do all that program switching backwards and forwards. Any tapes that had to be played into the program, we would do that. And the other thing was just to keep Peter Evans happy, which wasn't a very difficult job, really. So that was the way it went.
So did you have to look after sort of the volumes?
Yes, oh yes.
Everything like this? So
oh yes, yes. All
there's not much chance for sort of drifting off.
No, not really. No, you had to keep wide awake.
Hmm.
Oh yes, yes, that's right.
There must be many stories, if not funny stories, of things that didn't quite go to plan or didn't quite go the way they were meant to. Can you recall any?
I think we did pretty well, actually. We kept things going pretty well. But I can tell you some funny stories about Peter Evans.
I'm sure Peter won't mind.
He's unfortunately long gone.
Yes.
Yes, long gone as Peter. Peter lived in East Malvern. He eventually shifted out to one of the eastern suburbs. Anyway, he was doing some work and he wanted some bluestone blocks to do some paving work. Well, we were down the peninsula one day at the weekend in the car, and I happened to see a big pile of these bluestone blocks. So we thought, aha. So we got out and grabbed one and put it in the boot with some difficulty, I have to say. And anyway, the next morning, I think it was, I took them in and I told him about the bluestone. Oh, he said, put it in the car. He had an old VW at the time, an old Beetle. So we took it out. When I say we, that's Jonesy and I. We were both on at the same time. We sat it on the seat, the passenger seat. We didn't realise that later on it went right through the seat, landed on the floor.
They're very heavy.
Very, very heavy, yes, yes. Anyway, I think he was just about ready to get rid of the car and trade it in on something new. So anyway, nothing ever happened about it, but that was quite a story.
Did he ever have live guests in the studio? Or was it all?
No, never. Never did. No, it was back before the days of talkback radio or anything like that. Now, of course, if you listen to the breakfast session, it's all talkback radio. They get people in from here, there and everywhere. But no, he did it all on his own, completely and utterly. I don't think he ever rehearsed a program that I know of. He had time to rehearse a program. He was given time to prepare programs, but I don't think Evans ever did. I think he just came in and he did it. He was one of those fellows that could sit down and talk, and he did, about all sorts of things. Quite incredible.
Did your stay with the ABC, was that limited then to, if I could put it this way, panel operation, or did you move into other areas?
No, I moved into other areas after that, and I finished up in master control.
What does that mean?
Well, master control controls the whole system. In other words, if there's something coming in from interstate, we have to patch that through to the studio involved that wants to take that program. It involved switching FM. FM programs were just coming in at that time. And so we had to look after that. We had to monitor the quality of everything to make sure it was okay. Weekends, we'd have to organise the broadcasts from football, cricket, all that sort of thing. You have to equalise the lines, make sure the quality was right. We'd have to then put it through to the various studios that required it, In those days, we only had sport on Saturday.
Mm, that's right.
Very different now. But we'd have one main match that they'd describe. They'd send out commentators to it. And then at every other match, they'd send a commentator out with a little box and he'd hook it up to a telephone line and it would come into us. We'd have to equalise it. And it had a radio in it so he could listen to 3LO, if I can put it that way, when they'd get the cue and he'd go ahead and do his little bit about the match out on another ground somewhere, and that would go round the grounds, as they called it.
Yes. Yeah, I would assume that the ABC would have been as technologically advanced as any other organisation in those days, and yet technology these days is all digital and it's all just a button push and everything's done for you, but it wouldn't have been like that in the early 60s, would it?
No, everything was done. There was very, very few delayed broadcasts, if I can put it that way. The only ones we would have had were programs produced in Melbourne that were taped, and that was another one of our jobs, of course, at that time, was to go up into the recorder department and duplicate tapes to be sent to all other states so they could play them on air.
Join Ron and I next week for part two of his story, where he'll share stories and anecdotes about his work as a technician. We learn when and how he came to marry Lynn, and why he returned to work with Radio Australia after retiring from the ABC. All this and more with Ron Fisher on next week's Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Turak Times.